Hey there, it's Rachel. So we messed up, the big we, NPR. We made a change to our web servers that we did not expect to have any effect on podcasts. Clearly, we were wrong, and it forced a whole bunch of episodes into NPR podcast feeds, resulting in downloads you did not ask for, which I know was super confusing. It also made it hard or basically impossible for you to find and listen to Up First or your other favorite NPR podcast for that matter. We are so sorry. We fixed the root cause of the problem shortly after we found out it exists, but it's taken a while for that fix to make it to all the podcast apps. If you unsubscribed from this show or any other NPR show, please, please, please take a minute to resubscribe. If you're still having problems, go to npr.org/help. There is assistance for you there. Believe me when I tell you that NPR takes this very seriously, and we are taking steps to make sure nothing like this ever happens again. So thank you for listening to that. And now on to the show.
Attorney General William Barr has chosen not to testify in front of the House Judiciary Committee.
The committee chair thinks he knows why.
He is terrified of having to face a skilled attorney.
Could Democrats hold him in contempt?
I'm David Greene with Rachel Martin, and this is Up First from NPR News. Venezuela's opposition leader Juan Guaido called for the largest march in the country's history yesterday. Fewer than expected showed, and those that did were met with this. Rubber bullets, tear gas. So is Maduro's grip on power as strong as he says it is?
And the extradition hearing for Julian Assange begins today in London. He was sentenced Wednesday to 50 weeks in a British prison for skipping bail. What are the chances he'll be brought to the U.S.? Stay with us. We'll give you the news you need to start your day.
Support for Up First and the following message come from the Platinum Card from American Express. Platinum enhances life's moments, both big and small, so that you can live life to the fullest. Don't live life without it. Support also comes from SimpliSafe Home Security. Their completely wireless system was built to protect every point of access to your home with no long-term contracts. Get free shipping and a 60-day money-back guarantee today at simplisafe.com/upfirst.
The latest battle in Washington is over the public narrative of the Mueller report. Specifically, who influenced the public's understanding of the report for the 27 days between when the special counsel Robert Mueller finished his work and when it was released with redactions to the public?
Yeah, after Mueller gave the finished report to the Attorney General, William Barr, Barr then released this 4-page memo summarizing it and giving his own conclusions. And we know now that Mueller wrote a letter to Barr, the Attorney General, to complain that he had mischaracterized the special counsel's conclusions. That letter was the focus of much of the questioning yesterday when Barr went before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal had this to say.
This letter was an extraordinary act. A career prosecutor rebuking the Attorney General of the United States, memorializing in writing.
Now, the Attorney General had a different interpretation.
The letter's a bit snitty, and I think it was probably written by one of his staff people.
Barr went on to say that the controversy surrounding his 4-page summary is, quote, mind-bendingly bizarre. And he suggested that political point scoring was taking precedent.
There's an election in 18 months. That's a very democratic process. But we're out of it. We have to stop using the criminal justice process as a political weapon.
Now, Barr was supposed to go before the House Judiciary Committee today, but the Justice Department has confirmed he's not going. He's withdrawing his participation. This is all because of a disagreement over who would be allowed to question him. NPR's Tim Mack has been following all these things, and he is in the studio. So let's begin with today, what was supposed to happen. The Attorney General was supposed to go to the House, give testimony there. He's not going. How come?
Well, it's actually ostensibly over formatting issues. The House Judiciary Committee had wanted some portion of the questioning to be done by the committee's lawyers, that is, staff on the committee, and this questioning would be done in a longer chunk of time instead of the 5 minutes from one side, 5 minutes from the other side.
So that would mean the lawmakers themselves, they would not be asking the questions in this scenario.
They would be allowing staff to ask the questions. Now, I think that the original idea was that lawmakers would start and do the traditional format, and then they would end with a longer sort of almost court-like scene where lawyers are questioning for longer periods of time.
And he didn't like that idea, so he's not going. But could the House committee compel him to appear?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, they have remedies, but those remedies are limited. They could try to subpoena Barr, but then we'd be looking at a fight over that subpoena. There have been some suggestions among Democrats even to go so far as to impeach the Attorney General, but that doesn't really... That hasn't really gotten a lot of traction among mainstream Democrats or the leadership of the Democratic Party. Democrats are still planning their next steps. They're planning to meet this morning as scheduled and saying they hope Barr would change his mind. That doesn't look likely either. The thing is that the chairman said yesterday that the next step would be seeking a contempt citation against the Attorney General, and that would set up a whole new set of legal challenges.
But that brings us to our next question, right? This hearing yesterday, there were Democrats, senators who came out of that saying that Barr should resign. A lot of the back and forth was over that letter that I mentioned earlier, this letter in which Mueller criticized how Barr characterized his report. How did the senators get into that with Barr? What was that back and forth like?
You know, a lot of this was about what Democrats feel is that the Attorney General is acting as a personal attorney for the president, not as an Attorney General for the United States. Here's what Senator Hirono of Hawaii said. She kind of encapsulated the way a lot of Democrats feel right now.
Now, the American people know that you are no different from Rudy Giuliani or Kellyanne Conway or any of the other people who sacrificed their once decent reputation for the grifter and liar who sits in the Oval Office.
Because we should say she's saying that because she believes that Barr was essentially covering up for the president by not drawing a conclusion of obstruction and by not releasing Mueller's findings earlier.
That's right. But Republicans, on the other hand, they'll hold up the Mueller report itself and say, hey, look, you've got a copy of it. The Attorney General has released a copy of it. And Senator Lindsey Graham, for example, the chairman of the committee, is essentially saying we should put it all behind us. Here's what Senator Lindsey Graham said yesterday during the hearing.
I appreciate very much what Mr. Mueller did for the country. I have read most of the report. For me, it is over.
Are we going to see Mueller go before a congressional committee soon?
We certainly can anticipate, and Democrats in the House anticipate and hope that he will be testifying sometime in May.
That's where the next questions are for sure. NPR's Tim Mak. We appreciate it, Tim.
Thank you.
In recent days, U.S. officials have been characterizing the political turmoil in Venezuela as nearing its end.
Okay, so what's happening in Venezuela? Well, the opposition leader there, Juan Guaido, has been calling for the, quote, final phase of the operation to oust President Nicolas Maduro, asking millions of Venezuelans to take to the streets. But the reality here is a lot more complex. Venezuelans did come out in protest yesterday in a bid to put further pressure on Maduro, but they showed up in the thousands, not really the millions, and they were met with resistance. It's a sound there of tear gas, also rubber bullets being fired by the National Guard on some hardcore demonstrators who remained through the afternoon. By that time, in the capital, Caracas, many people had already headed home.
And NPR's Philip Reeves is in Caracas and joins us now. Phil, you have covered a lot of protests in your career. You've covered a lot of protests in Venezuela. What was the scene like yesterday compared to others that you've observed?
Well, I think it was more tense. The crowd size was smaller. And I think that violence is a big difference. When Guaido began his campaign to assume power in earnest in January, there were some clashes at that time at the outset. But he's consistently said he wants this to be a peaceful campaign. And it's mostly been that. Yesterday in that crowd, I saw people with their faces covered with cloths. They had homemade shields and gas masks. I saw people breaking rocks used to throw at Maduro. Security forces. And those clashes you heard, they were outside an air base in Caracas where Guaido had summoned his supporters Tuesday. The people who are in the front line taking on the security forces of Maduro, they're a small minority, but it means that the protests have changed in character and there's a wider, growing threat of wider violence. Carolina Brisino, a teacher, is a veteran opposition activist who was there yesterday, and she says that Maduro's security forces shot rubber bullets at her when these clashes first began on Tuesday.
So I have to run because I feel the bullets on my back and my t-shirt, you know, has the holes in it. I have been here, you know, fighting all since 20 years ago, okay? But this was the first day that I was very, very scared.
You were hit by a rubber bullet yesterday.
Yesterday.
And yet you are back again today.
Yes, I have to. I have to be here.
That's amazing. But, I mean, how many other people are going to endure that kind of risk? I mean, when you talk to people, do they have the sense that this is almost at an end, or that Maduro's not going to go anywhere?
No, I think the Guaido supporters are actually disappointed. They really thought this week was going to be the moment. It wasn't, and they're disappointed about that. Mm-hmm. Also, Maduro's people were out on the streets yesterday, too. They held May Day rallies, and their message was clear. This is another episode in the U.S.'s attempt, in their view, to end their revolution, started by the late Hugo Chavez, and kick out Maduro, install a puppet leader. And they were making that view very clear yesterday, too, although they are fewer in number than Guaido's supporters, it has to be said.
What should we be watching for in coming days, Phil? What's going to happen?
Well, the key thing is Guaido wants a general strike. That's going to be difficult. He wants people with government jobs to start out with these strikes, but they're heavily dependent on those jobs and they'll get kicked out if they take part.
And NPR's Philip Reeves in Caracas. Thanks, Phil. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right, Julian Assange, his extradition hearing begins this morning. Yesterday, the WikiLeaks founder was sentenced to 50 weeks in a British prison for skipping bail back in 2012. He was wanted by Swedish authorities investigating rape and sexual assault allegations.
Now, let's remember, Assange lived inside the Ecuadorian embassy in London from 2012 until being dragged out by British authorities last month with the cooperation of Ecuador. His attorney claims that Assange sought refuge inside the embassy because he feared he would be, quote, kidnapped by the United States.
NPR's London correspondent Frank Langfitt is with us this morning. Hi, Frank.
Hey, good morning, Rachel.
Has the public heard from Assange at all since he was taken into custody?
We have. He spoke. He also submitted a letter. And what he did is he sort of offered an explanation, said he hid out in the embassy because he was afraid that the U.S. would try to grab him and might even torture him. He said he lived in bad conditions in the embassy, confined to small rooms, didn't have access to a garden. And there was a letter from his doctor saying he'd become introverted and sad. Now, Assange did apologize, say he was sorry for jumping bail. Here's the quote. I found myself struggling through terrifying circumstances. I did what I thought at the time was best. But the judge dismissed this argument. He said Assange cost UK taxpayers more than $20 million and that nobody's above the law.
So the extradition process to the U.S. is going to start today. Can you just remind us of what he's accused of by the American government?
Well, he's accused of trying to help Chelsea Manning, that's the U.S. Army intelligence officer, break part of a password to get into a classified network. And WikiLeaks, of course, if you would remember, published a trove of classified government documents. And there was even a video among them where American soldiers in a helicopter killed some unarmed Iraqis. Assange casts himself as a journalist holding the U.S. government accountable. Christian Hoffmanson, he's the editor-in-chief of WikiLeaks. This is what he said yesterday.
What is at stake there could be a question of life and death for Mr. Assange. It is also a question of life and death for a major journalistic principle.
Now, of course, the U.S. government doesn't see it this way at all. Prosecutors are pursuing the conspiracy to computer hack charge to kind of frame this simply as cyber theft, and doesn't want to provide, you know, Assange any more ammo for the argument that he's just being punished for publicizing a leak and trying to protect a source.
All right, NPR's Frank Langfitt bringing us the news and the context on Julian Assange's extradition hearing, which begins today. Frank, we appreciate it.
Happy to do it, Rachel.
And that is up first for this Thursday, May 2nd. I'm Rachel Martin.
And I'm David Green. We hope you start your day back here with us tomorrow. You can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. And as Rachel said at the top, if, because of our technical glitches, you unsubscribed, please, please subscribe again. Also, take a few minutes if you can to rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts.
And if you're ready for more NPR news, you can find NPR's Morning Edition on your NPR station at stations.npr.org. And for podcast local news and the latest headlines, take NPR everywhere you go with the NPR One app. You can find it at your app store.
Weight can be a thorny topic, but Life Kit is here to give you the facts.
The scale measures the gravitational pull of the Earth at a given moment in time. The scale doesn't measure health, happiness, success, effort, or self-worth.
Here at Life Kit, we're rethinking weight. Find it wherever you're listening or at npr.org/lifekit.